A podcast of the cinema. Am I even on? What the heck?
How about that? There we go.
A podcast of the cinema. I'm on this show too.
Just barely.
You're Dave White. I'm Alonso Duraldi. We are film critics. We are married to each other.
And this is the show.
This is the show. So this is kind of a fill-in show, actually, because we didn't do one last weekend because I was at the Venice Film Festival, you guys,
Oh, were you gone somewhere?
Perhaps you didn't notice. I got to miss the heat wave.
You, listen.
Or at least most of it.
As much as I always, I'm happy the first 3 days you're gone, that you're gone.
Right.
Just because I like a little vacation from you.
Sure. We all do.
Listen, if you're married in a long-term relationship.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
You go that 3 days, it's like 72 hours. You're like, no spouse, 72 hours. No one, I don't have to talk to anybody. I don't have to get dressed.
The life I could have led.
I don't have to think about dinner or pleasing another person for dinner.
Did you take advantage? Did you have
No, because the thing is that after 3 days, my normal, I miss him now after 3 days. He can come home now. After 3 days, I thought, it's so good he's not here because it's 1,000 degrees here.
Yes.
And it isn't right now as we record this, but it was.
Yeah.
While you were gone, I was not in this apartment very often.
I don't blame you.
I would get up in the morning. I would close everything up by around 9 a.m., close all the shades, close all the windows, everything just locked up tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just hope that some of the cool air from the night would stay in the apartment. And it did-ish.
Mm.
And then it would come back at sundown. But I would bounce from air-conditioned place to air-conditioned place all day.
Mall walking Dave.
And I would think to myself, it's good that he's not here because he would be suffering and we would both be miserable. Sort of argumentative and, you know.
Yeah, this is murder weather.
And so, you know, crimes went up last week.
Totally.
They must have. There's no doubt in my head.
Well, I mean, look, I was in balmy but relatively cool Italy and seeing people that we know living in, there was a huge fire raging in the valley.
Yes.
And people were posting their like phone screen of weather, and the weather forecast for the day was smoke. You know, meanwhile, there's like tropical storms last week in Houston, this week in Florida. It's just, you know, it's a friggin' nightmare.
So I was pleased that you were in an air-conditioned place and having, you know, you were doing all of that. Because it was not cool here. Like, I was at Gary Cotti's swimming pool most of the time. Or in his apartment. I would work in his apartment all day.
Sure.
And then come home. But it was, yeah.
Yeah, no, it all looked miserable.
It was. And I was almost naked all the time.
I'm glad I wasn't here to create more hot breathing.
So was everybody else, too. I would be driving around
naked, not glad I wasn't here.
Everyone else was glad you weren't here. Everyone else was practically naked on the street. I would drive around and see these unfortunate folks who were walking somewhere, but wearing essentially bikinis. Like, not no one, it was as if suddenly en masse, the entire city just decided, I don't care how my body looks. I'm not putting on.
That's a big step for Los Angeles.
I'm not putting on one more item of clothing.
You know we're in crisis when that mood hits.
There will be nothing else covered up. Like, it was, yeah. So, that was weird. And then, while you were gone, I went to see some movies in empty theaters, but I'll talk about that later. I need to know. Well, I don't need to know because I heard it all before when you came home. Tell the Linoleum Knife listeners about Venice.
All right, I'll give you guys the quick recap, but I'm going to...
Yeah, because you saw like 12 movies. You don't
no,
need to.
No, not that many. But we're going to... These are all movies that you and I are going to review when they open. And so I don't want to like give all my stuff away.
I was super envious that you saw Ex Libris.
Yes.
And I was super envious that you saw Woodshock.
Yes. So Woodshock is the debut film from the Malevi, is that his name?
Malevi
sisters.
Yeah.
Better known as the fashion label Rodarte. And starring, I guess, their muse, Kirsten Dunst. And it's... Most of the movie is Kirsten Dunst kind of having, like, a drug freak out. And I thought it was interesting. I was going to review it, but at the end I was like, Dave White needs to review this. Because it is so sort of dipping a toe into experimental that I wasn't... You know that kind of cinema better than I do, and things that I thought were cool maybe are cliches, and I just don't know it. So I'll be curious to hear what you think about it. I thought it was interesting. Every critic that I know who was at that screening in Venice hated it. Like, and last time I looked on Rotten Tomatoes, it was 0%. But it is very 70s-ish. Like, I think a lot of people are going to compare it to Virgin Suicides. Just because of Kirsten Dunst, but because it is shot in that sort
is
of
it
like
Kirsten or Kirsten.
I don't know. I just people I know who spell their name that way, like Kirsten, who was my old boss at Outfest, insisted on being Kirsten. Maybe it's Kirsten. I don't know.
I always call her Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, okay, what do they call her on?
I'm not going to repeat it.
Okay, fine.
Because it's mean.
All right. Kiki, they called her at that website.
They called her Kiki
something else.
Yeah,
yes,
I'm not going to do it.
Which was mean.
I'm not going to do it.
Anyway, Kiki, she's good in the film. But yeah, they're really aggressively going for a kind of... I mean, it is set in the modern day because weed dispensaries play a role in the whole thing.
Okay.
But it's that thing where the young people, you know, they like those clothing, those fabric patterns and facial hair configurations where they could be in 1973 and you wouldn't know the difference.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that sort of sun flare and, you know, like the way that Ed Lockman made so much of the Virgin Suicides looked like, you know, a feminine hygiene commercial from 1972. There's that.
Oh, kind of, I sat in on the round table with Sofia Coppola.
Yeah.
And she talked about how she wanted it to look like a Breck commercial.
No, I interviewed her on that same junket, and she didn't know what FDS spray was. I had to explain it to her.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it operates in that kind of visual aesthetic. I thought it was kind of cool, but I seem to be alone among critics who liked it so far.
I'm a huge fan of their clothing.
Right.
Obviously, I'm a dude. I don't wear their clothing. Because it's, well, they do design for men, but.
Really?
They do.
For skinny, skinny men?
But they design for skinny, skinny men who are okay with spending $3,000 on a sweater that looks torn to shreds. Well, now, I think what they do is really incredible, clothing-wise. I'm excited to see how they approach filmmaking.
Well, the movie opens in 2 weeks,
yes.
So we'll be talking about it then.
But I do know, I haven't read any of the reviews, and I'm not going to.
No, nor should you.
Because I have to write my own.
Right. And then Ex Libris...
But I do know that everyone hates it.
Yeah. Ex Libris opens next week.
Yeah.
And that is the latest Frederick Wiseman documentary.
It opens next week in New York.
Oh, is that the deal? Okay.
It opens 2 weeks from now
in Los Angeles. Okay.
Yeah.
It is the latest Frederick Wiseman documentary. It is a 3.5-hour movie about the New York Public Library.
Oh, God. I'm just... it fills me with joy to think about sitting and watching all 3.5 hours of that.
It is quite lovely.
I'm going to go buy a ticket. Offered me a screening this week.
Really?
And it was in a screening room I'd never heard of before. And I don't trust a place I've never walked into before to have seats that are going to accommodate me for 3.5 hours.
Ah, fair enough.
So I'm gonna go buy my ticket.
Run it by me. Maybe I've been.
No, you've never been there either.
Oh, okay.
I forgot the name of it, but it's like it was alien and new. Hmm. And so I'm going to go buy a ticket on opening day. I'm going to sit at the Royal. I'm going to have delicious treats. I can't wait.
Sneak some naan in.
You know I might. Go get a wrap at the naan hut, bring some sangak in there. little dipping sauces.
It is some people who are members of our club at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Sell it.
One of the levels is our selector level, where Dave and I pick a cool item of media and send it out to you, and then we all have a chit-chat about it.
So far, it's just been books and DVDs, but
yes.
I want to expand that.
I almost
and make
did a CD
something.
Once, and you voted me down, but I might go
I think it was
point.
Because the CD was terrible.
No.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
No.
I think you had a bad idea for a CD. Like, that would suck and no one would like it.
No.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
No. Anyway, one of the ones that we did last year was Wiseman's The Store.
Which is fantastic.
Which is fantastic. And it is in my Christmas movie book, mm-hmm. because it is set in the Neiman Marcus flagship store in downtown Dallas during the Thanksgiving/Christmas shopping season of 1982.
Yep.
And the way that he kind of does these institutional films, and he's done them on a variety of subjects, is there's sort of the outward facing aspects of it, where like, what services do people get there, and what, you know, how do they interact with the staff, and what are they looking for?
Right.
And then there's these sort of internal moments of like, here are the meetings where we figure out what is the direction of this place and what are our plans for the future and how are we going to make those happen? And so there's a lot of that happening in this movie. And it's not just in the, I forget the name of the main building with the lions in front where Carrie Bradshaw got left at the altar.
Yes.
They also go to the branches. So like, you go to the Bronx for like a job fair, or this other one, like the All Braille branch, you know, and it's fascinating. I really enjoyed it. But the big movies that I saw there were Downsizing, the new Alexander Payne film with Matt Damon, which
yes.
I liked quite a bit. It
yeah.
has, it's a sci-fi movie, but it's
okay. ultimate,
it, in its heart, it is an Alexander Payne movie.
Okay.
Ben Mankiewicz today said, yeah, I mean, it's his worst movie, but it's still great.
Well, how did he see it?
It was a Telluride also.
Oh, okay. All you guys.
I know, we're so fancy.
Young Turks, what the flickers, running off all over the world. Seeing these things.
I saw Suburbicon, which is the film George Clooney directed, from started out as a screenplay by the Coen brothers. I did not like it.
Right.
I did like Guillermo del Toro's
Guillermo del Toro.
The Shape of Water. I liked Andrew Haig's new movie, Lean on Pete. I did not care for Victoria and Abdul.
I'm supposed to see that next week sometime.
You know, Judi Dench is great in it. She's always great. And, you know, she's played Victoria before. She nails it, but the movie around her is...
This mango is off.
Yes. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I almost feel like it's the art house... The more I think about this movie, the more I feel like it's the art house version of The Toy.
Oh, my God.
Just... Chew on that one. We'll go into it in more detail when it opens in a couple of weeks. And then what else? I saw the William Friedkin documentary where he films a real life exorcism.
Why would he do that?
I don't know.
And where was this exorcism? What country was
it? In Italy.
Of course.
Yes, naturally. It's really cheeseball. Like, he goes back to the Georgetown campus where he shot The Exorcist, and he keeps saying, here at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., blah, 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 blah. And I don't know if he's from Queens, but he talks like the president. Like, not exactly, but there's the cadences are kind of the same.
Our current president, you mean?
Yes. Mm. It was a little off-putting. I'm blanking. I'm still catching up on sleep.
Speaking of the current president, he tweeted something the other day. It was something like, big week coming up. That was all I said. Uh-huh. And the responses on Twitter are you resigning? Are you dying?
Oh, I saw First Reformed.
Yeah, what's that?
The new film from Paul Schrader.
Oh.
Which is his...
The one that you...
His remake, not a remake, of Diary of a Country Priest.
You passed it by me first. You were like...
I need the Bresson expert to sign off on this.
You need the Bressonian of the home to tell you what was what. But you were fine. I mean, your review didn't need me.
I just wanted to be safe.
But I read through your review before you published it, and you didn't need me at all.
I didn't want the fancy Bresson people coming after me if I had gotten something wrong, so, you know.
They are...
I know how you fancy Bresson people are. You're vicious.
They're dicks. They are.
Yeah.
They're not nice people.
Yeah.
None of them. Especially me.
I was not going to cross you.
As a fancy Bresson person, I'm really excited about this.
I'm very curious to hear how you...
Because it's more than just the fact that I'm a fancy Bresson person. I've read Georges Bernanos' novel, Diary of a Country Priest, twice. And so...
Ew.
Yeah, and so I had to read it in college for a comparative lit class. Mm-hmm. But then like 2 years ago, I just decided I wanted to reread it because I thought, I'm an old man now. Maybe I'll look at it differently than I did in college.
Well...
When I was... extricating myself physically from the church in my college years.
Well, Ethan Hawke plays a minister in the country, and he keeps a diary, and he has stomach cancer.
Right, just like...
So I'm like... and it's funny, I didn't walk into this movie knowing any of this, but it was kind of like, ding, 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 ding. You know?
Now, what I want to see are reviews that don't mention...
Oh, they'll happen.
People who don't even know that this is all...
I mean, most of the ones
lifted
that
from another
the
source.
The ones that I saw out of Venice, you know, they know how to play Name That Tune.
Right.
But once it goes wide, I'm sure there's going to be folks that completely miss it. So you can enjoy mocking those.
I really can't wait. Dear film critic, I'm a fancy Bresson person, and I would like to tell you... about how wrong you are.
The subject line, actually.
I'm a Bresson-y bro.
Oh, yeah. God. Anyway, so yeah, Venice was great, and I'm still a little jet lagged, but hooray. And let's talk about this week, which was a real humdinger, as Labor Day weeks at the movies tend to always be.
Husband. Do you know what I got?
What do you got?
Tulip fever.
You got a tulip down.
In your absence, I went to see Tulip Fever.
Somebody on Twitter said, I think 80% of the Tulip Fever business this weekend is going to be critics and essayists who just want to make sure that it's real.
I didn't see any other looky-loos or media people.
Okay.
However, the reason I didn't see them is because there was basically almost no one in the theater. Friday morning.
Opening day.
I went to the Grove. First, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning screening, mm-hmm. and I was grateful to be out of the house.
Yeah. And it bears noting for people who don't live in Los Angeles, often when a big movie opens and you go to an early matinee on the opening Friday... Folks are there.
It's a crowded house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get to the Grove, and you know how... Okay, so I always park at level 6.
Right.
So I always remember where my car is. But I'm driving up past all the other levels, and there just aren't cars parked on those levels. There's like 3 cars on level 6. Normally there's about 30, but...
But this is on the super hot day where nobody wants to be in a mall that doesn't have a roof.
I get down to the ground level, and I've got 20 minutes to kill before the movie, and I'm thinking, hello, La Durée, it's time for a chocolate croissant. Now, La Durée opened in the Grove last year, and there is always a line out the door. Always. There's always, the tables are always packed with people, and there's always a line out the door of people waiting at the pastry counter just buying pastry to go. There was no one in La Durée except the employees. No one.
I wonder what Disneyland was like during this
Oh,
harsh.
Someone was telling me about this, how there was like no one at Disneyland either.
Wow.
There was, no one went out. If you didn't have to go out of the house to escape your own lack of air conditioning to go find some other air conditioning, you weren't going to
Other places with no air
other
conditioning.
places with no air conditioning. The La Durée has plenty of air conditioning,
Yes.
but it's in an open air mall.
Right.
And it was empty. I walked in, I walked right up, I said, "One chocolate croissant, please." And I said, "It's very weird to be in here and be the only customer." She said, "I know." She said, "There haven't been many people in this morning." And I said, "But your doors are wide open. Your air conditioning is flying right out the door." She said, "I wish we could close them."
Poor thing.
And no, but it was nice. I mean, it's weird how they do that at those mall stores. It's nice and cool inside, even if they've got their doors wide open. It's completely wasteful and horrible. But
yes.
And then I walked past the J. Crew for men, and their doors were completely shut, but they don't want you coming inside.
No,
anyway.
They don't.
They're jerks in there. And I go into the movie theater. It's like
the tumble and tumbleweed.
Dude, Tulip Fever was in the biggest house,
yes,
in the theater, which tells you something because there's literal garbage in the other theaters, like trash piled up on the floor. I mean, and that's the movie. You walk in, you're like, "Oh, look at, here's this trash piled up on the floor." You would rather drink the sewer than watch most of the films that are happening in the other theaters at the Grove.
Please come see the layover.
Also, yeah, the layover. Also, they're still showing Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, whatever opened in June, Dunkirk. They're still opening movies that have been out for 8 weeks.
Hey, everybody, it's still summer.
That never happens at the Grove. They don't show, they don't hold things for 8 weeks there. Ever. Not even, no, it doesn't matter how big it is. They've held everything popular from the summer, hoping that someone will come see it. And so.
Well, this was a historically deadly box office weekend, apparently.
Yeah.
Like the worst Labor Day weekend since the 80s or something.
There were about 7-8 other people in there. All of them old.
Because who else wants to see Tulip Fever?
Right. So it's from the guy who directed the
Boleyn Girl.
The other Boleyn Girl and the Nelson Mandela movie with Idris Elba.
Oh, okay. Long Walk to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stars Alicia Vikander as a woman who grew up in a convent and who was an orphan. She is saved from a life of servitude by Christoph Waltz, who marries her and who is perfectly nice to her, but he's a blowhard and kind of a drip.
But he is not like what you would expect a Christoph Waltz character to be, which is like somebody who's nice on the outside, but like evil and, you know.
No, he's genuinely nice.
He's whatever.
The worst thing about him is that he's pompous and vain, and he calls his penis his little soldier.
Oh, yeah. A lot.
Gentlemen, don't do that.
First of all, avoid having a name for it at all.
Unless you're Elvis, then you get to call it Little Elvis, which apparently he did. And then, but...
And if you must call it something, little anything.
Little
is
anything
really
is not,
not
what you...
No, it's not good marketing.
So he goes, every night he has to bang her so they can have a son.
Yes.
A kid, any kind of kid, really. And he walks into the bedroom every night and says, "I think my little," like he says it in that dumb, naughty way, "I think my little soldier is ready for you tonight.
He's standing at attention." Well, and that's actually one of the things I liked was like this montage of like him peeing in the corner in the chamber.
No, that was
climbing
funny.
Into bed, saying the thing about the little soldier, climbing on top of her, and it just there's this montage of it happening over and over again. And you just get the idea of this numbing repetition of this nighttime ritual.
And it brings up the thing about art house film, which is what this is. It was at the Grove Multiplex, but this is an art house movie.
It was intended to be like a Weinstein Company awards season extravaganza.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
Mind you, it was intended to be a Weinstein Company awards season extravaganza in 2014.
But
that's another story.
They've held on to it for so long. There's so much humping in this movie. There's perfunctory humping with Christoph Waltz and Alicia Vikander. And then when Alicia Vikander falls in love with their portraitist, played by everyone's favorite, Dane DeHaan.
A fine actor who is, again, miscast.
I guess he's a fine actor.
He's a good actor, but this is now two movies in a row where he is so far out of his wheelhouse that he needs GPS to come back. I mean, it's... There's a lot of things that he's good at doing, but this sort of like swaggering, swinging D, you know, like ha cha cha sex pot.
When they get down, they are naked. Their backs are all arched, and the light turns orange.
they're chiaroscuro humping.
Yeah, yeah. So then the story is also about her maid, Holiday Granger, who is the cook and the cleaning lady, and she's in love with the fishmonger,
Jack O'Connell,
and
they're way more interesting than the leads.
They are. This is all against the backdrop of the 17th century Dutch tulip frenzy.
Yes.
And the speculation on the tulip market, and what a go-go time that was.
It's sort of like the Beanie Babies of the Rembrandt era, where the people were just paying insane prices for tulip bulbs until the market, as it should, collapsed. It wants to be.
Why this has to be happening during the tulip frenzy is perhaps better explained in the book that it's based on.
Quite possibly, which was a big hit and a big book club fave.
But it only... First of all, it takes them 20 minutes to get to the tulips. They don't even mention the word tulip for about 20 minutes.
In the credits, they talk about tulips.
Okay, in the credits, they discuss it a little bit. But like the characters don't talk about it much throughout the first 20 minutes. And then afterwards, it's still always... The tulips are supporting characters. And that is disappointing to a flower fan such as myself. I would rather watch a Frederick Wiseman documentary about tulips and their production and any other market speculation on their bulbs than this.
I would rather watch Barbra Streisand sing Hurry, It's Lovely Up Here to the blooming flowers at the beginning of On a Clear Day You Can See Forever.
Having said this, however, it is not the worst or most boring movie ever. It's actually sort of wacky because there are fake pregnancies and fake deaths and tulip entrepreneurship intrigue and Judy Dench is this
abbess.
She's an abbess who's also sort of a shark when it comes to tulip, you know, business.
Yeah.
And Zach Galifianakis
has a scene with Judy Dench.
He's the drunk assistant to Dane DeHaan, and he has a scene with Judy Dench.
Matthew Morrison does a lot of lusty banging. You were talking about all the different kinds there were in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You see him sort of like work his way through a bunch of hooas. Cara Delevingne, the other star of Valerian, pops up as one of the hooas in this movie.
Because the tulip business takes place in a brothel.
Right.
All the bidding and the yo-ho-hoing for the tulips happens during people are being drunk and carousing with prostitutes.
Yes.
Nothing makes much sense.
This is not like a total catastrophe. It's just mostly a bore with some moments of like, well, that might have led somewhere interesting, but it didn't. But people say, oh, we shouldn't review the tortured production history. We should review the final product. But I think the tortured production history had a lot to do with what we wind up with, because it does feel so cobbled together that it's sort of like, you can imagine all the test screenings they did, and they're like, okay, we need less of the tulip intrigue and, you know, more butt cheek. I don't know what, you know, but it's...
It had the butt cheek.
Yeah, it's... And I never bought Alicia Vikander and Dane DeHaan as being super passionately into each other.
No.
And then the fact that Christoph Waltz is such a vanilla cream nothing, like, that takes away any of the tension of, you know, all the stuff that's being hidden from him and the maneuvering to get around him or to escape
him. Yeah, he's just a nice dude.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, well, the worst that's going to happen, he's going to be a little disappointed in you.
Exactly. You know, like, there's a part where, like, you know, I can't leave him. He'd never stop searching for me. It's like... I think he'd stop. I think he would be like, eh, and move on and, like, get that marriage annulled and marry somebody else who would actually give him the kid that he wants.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But Holiday Grainger and Jack O'Connell, like, I would have totally watched a movie about the maid and the fishmonger. They were way more interesting.
I like that Holiday Grainger.
I do, too. I'm waiting for a movie that really, like, uses her right. She was in that super boring... Coast Guard movie, Their Finest Hours,
right.
Or whatever.
Right.
But she has, and we talked about it when we reviewed that movie, like, she's got movie star face, like 1943 movie star face.
Right.
Like, she should be selling war bonds with that face. Mm-hmm. So I want better movies to happen to her.
Agreement. Why don't you talk about Goon the Tooth?
Goon, Last of the Enforcers. Is a sequel to Goon, a hockey comedy from like 5 years ago.
A hockey comedy that's so damn funny and so cool.
Yeah.
I really loved the first movie. I haven't seen this one yet.
The first Goon is really great. And the first Goon is a hockey movie that actually deserves to be mentioned in the same breath as Slapshot.
Yes.
Which is, ask any hockey person and, like, they'll tell you that is the great hockey movie of all time. You know, Miracle and, you know, the Mighty Ducks, whatever. But yeah, it's all about Slapshot. So this one, the first one was co-written by Jay Baruchel with Evan Goldberg, who is Seth Rogen's writing partner. And this time around, Baruchel co-writes with somebody else and he directs it. And I don't know if we can necessarily blame him, but it's not as good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it still funny, though?
It is funny in fits and starts, and the characters, if you liked them in the first movie, you're happy to see them again.
All right.
It kind of boils down to being one of those sort of sequels that's just a diminishing returns. So,
right.
Sean William Scott is back as the goon, Doug Glatt, and, you know, who's not a very good hockey player, but he's great at beating people up, but he's super sweet. And he is married to Allison Pill's character, who in the first movie is this, like, you know, wild and crazy hockey groupie. But now, now they've settled down and she's pregnant. And so now she would rather that maybe he not fight so much anymore. And which is like a thankless role. The pregnant wife who really doesn't want you to go out and do the thing anymore.
The concerned wife role.
Yeah, I felt bad for her getting stuck with that. So now we get Alicia Cuthbert as like her sister or something, who gets to be the raunchy wrong one, you know.
I like Alicia Cuthbert.
I do like her, but the dialogue...
She was on Happy Endings.
That's right.
And every time I see her, I think, I wish Happy Endings were still on TV.
Exactly. All of those people get kind of a pass for life from me. I'm just thrilled to see them. But her dialogue's not that funny. And so that was annoying.
Bummer.
And then they bring back Liev Schreiber as sort of like the retired great, you know, hockey fighter that he has to fight at the end of the first movie.
Right.
And he's kind of falling apart, but then they want to bring him back. But even he has sort of said, like, if I get one more big hit, I'm going to have I'll have brain damage. And then the movie forgets that they said that. The big conflict this time is with a player played by Wyatt Russell, who I like.
Oh, yeah.
Who was a pro hockey player.
Was he?
Yeah.
For how long?
Like 7 years.
He seems too young to have been in pro hockey for 7 years. How old is he?
He's in his 30s.
Is he?
Yeah.
He looks like he's 19.
Well, I know. That's why the character he plays in Everybody Wants Him, remember? Where he's like
right.
a college student and then they finally kick him out because they figure out that he's 30.
Right.
So he has some funny stuff because, like, he plays for a rival team, but he is the son of the guy who owns the team that Doug plays on.
Okay.
And you can tell the dad has just been sort of, like, forcing hockey on this kid from you know, childhood. And, you know, every time they have any kind of discussion, it always comes back to, sunflower seeds are for winners, you know?
okay, so what's the verdict?
You know, on... on my new Maximum Fun podcast, ooh, Who ooh, Shot
ooh,
Ya?
Ooh, 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 sorry. Time to digress.
Wait, let me.
All right.
We have a, when we talk about new movies, the final thing that Ricky Carmona asks is, see it, screen it, or skip it.
Okay.
Stream it, or skip it.
We're right? not going to be doing that.
We're
here.
Not, but I'm just saying. Right. But we talked about it on that episode, and spoiler, I said stream it. And it actually is streaming, so wherever you live, you can
watch it right now.
In the U.S., yeah.
All right.
It is available on demand.
I do want to watch it.
But see Goon, y'all. That's the key takeaway
right,
from
of
all
course.
This.
Yes,
see
yes.
Goon, it is yeah. great. This one's okay.
Hmm. All right.
Anyway, you wanted to say...
The talk about this new thing.
I'm on a new show that's starting up this tomorrow, the Friday, Saturday, September 8th, on Maximum Fun. It's called Who Shot You? It's a weekly movie review show hosted by Ricky Carmona, who was on Wham Bam Pow, and you know him from Tosh.0 and other places. And it's going to be me and April Wolf from LA Weekly talking about movies. And yeah, this week we talk about the Goon sequel, and Jason Jones phones in to give us some Canadian insight on hockey and whatnot. And yeah, it's a fun show. Go subscribe. It is they have their thing up, so you can go ahead and start getting the show downloaded into your little whatever podcast app once it starts rolling. And I'm very excited about doing it. So yeah, I'm currently doing Pop Rocket until Margaret Wappler comes back from pregnancy leave.
Yep.
And then when that's done, I will still be doing Who Shot You? So
you are on all the podcasts.
I am on all the podcasts. Tell us about Hazlo Como Hombre, which I'm dying to see at some point. I'm probably not going to see it while it's in the theater, but I'm very curious.
How curious are you? Are you...
Yellow.
okay, so... Hazlo Como Hombre, I saw Saturday morning, and...
Also at the Grove.
And if you can believe this, there were even fewer people on Saturday morning than there were on Friday morning.
Were there negative people? How does that work?
I stood in the middle of the lobby, their huge lobby, and I took a photo of the lobby, and I took a photo of the long hallway where all the theaters are. And I was able to do this on the first try without waiting because there were literally no other people there.
You could have fired a cannonball.
It was Night of the Comet. I was not... with humanity in that theater.
You were legend.
Yes. And there was no other customer, no other paying customer in the theater.
When you went to go buy candy, were they kind of like...
Well, I mean, my friend, our friend Tito was with me.
Right.
But that was just us, just the two of us.
I like to think you were interrupting like a poker game or something going on at the concession stand because there was so little of
them to do. The employees were just chilling. There was nothing to do. If there was time to lean, there was time to clean, and they weren't even doing that.
I was going to say, shouldn't one of them have gone to get a hokey?
Nope. There was nothing to hokey up.
I guess not.
Nothing.
I'm sure they have like an actual honest-to-God cleaning crew come in late at night.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, first thing in the morning, if no one's there and no one's, you know, stepping on things or dropping stuff,
nope.
Then, yeah, you got nothing to do.
So.
Time to inventory the Jordan Almonds.
Hazlo Como Hombre. Do it like a man. Except... this is the weird part for me about this, and it's part of the film as well, the weirdness of the film. The English language translation...
it's like, do it like an hombre, right?
It's do it like an hombre. And I'm like, well, we already know what hombre is. It means man. And in the movie, when they say man to the other person, to another guy, it's hombre. And so the subtitle comes up on the screen... man. It doesn't come up on the screen as hombre.
Well, look, they want you to know from yards away that this is a film in Spanish.
Right. But if they had wanted you to not know that it was a film in Spanish, they wouldn't have released it under the title Hazlo Como Hombre. They would have released it under the title Do It Like a Man.
Well, this is six of one, half dozen the other, mm-hmm. Literally.
The other weird thing about the translations is... I know enough Spanish that when you say maricón, I know what that means. Mm-hmm. When you say puto, I know what that means. When you say cabrón, I know what that means. somehow the subtitles didn't know what those words meant. Because the subtitles were chicken, idiot, jerk.
Oh, boo.
And I'm like, that's not it. Tito's family's from El Salvador. He's like, this is wrong.
That's like, yeah, when you see the sort of cleaned up old foreign films, yeah. Where it's like, fool.
Yeah. Like, no. That's not what those words mean. So I'm sorry if anyone's children speak enough Spanish and profanities and sexual orientation slurs, and they just heard me say those things, but that's what the film is about. It's a comedy by a director named Nicolas Lopez, and he co-wrote the screenplay with another writer named Guillermo Amoedo, and I think they've seen a lot of Kevin Smith films. Because everyone in this R-rated comedy talks about the raunchiest sex things imaginable, which is the other weird thing, is that they're real skittish about translating insult words, but then they start talking about, like, anal this and dildo that, and I don't know who this movie is for.
I think we are in a tricky period in gay-straight relations.
Yes.
In that these people in Mexico clearly felt comfortable making a movie where these words would get thrown around to a gay character, not to a gay character, by a gay character, not by a gay character.
Yes.
As part of the language of the characters.
Yes.
But then somebody in the United States had to sit down at the subtitling keyboard and go...
We can't say that.
Yeah, it's like
that,
if you're
get that gay slur that
if
begins
you're
with F.
Gonna say maricón in Spanish, then you gotta say faggot in English. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't, then you are doing the film a disservice and kind of the audience a disservice.
Yes, because the character who says these words, the point of his character is that he's a homophobe,
right?
And his best friend comes out as gay, and so he has to learn to not be such a pain and a jerk.
Right.
And so, not to be such a cabrón.
Exactly.
And so, and everyone in the movie, this is a very progressive movie. Everyone in the movie is like, why are you being such an idiot? He's gay. Who cares? Why are you behaving this way? Why are you behaving this way? And along the way toward this, you know, lesson learned, there's actually quite a bit of funny stuff in the film. Production value-wise, it's kind of like a movie that Outfest would screen.
I kind of wish we had. Like, I didn't know this movie existed.
Yeah.
Because it was a big hit in Mexico, right?
Oh, was it? I don't know.
That's what I heard, yeah.
It's kind of funny. It looks pretty good. It's definitely that aspirational friend's apartment sort of thing where, you know, they live in Mexico City and they've all got great apartments and they're all real cool. And one of them works in
they're all walking to bistros and coffee houses.
Yes. And one of the guys,
like in 500 Days of Summer,
one of the guys is a barber and he works in, and this is no joke. The language of the film is Heapstead barber shop.
Para los Heapsteads.
And so, it's not a terrible film. It's just, if you're queer and you watch this, you're going to think it's from sometime around 1998. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the kind of indie we got out of our system.
It's Chasing
ago.
Amy.
Yeah.
In its own way. But, not, I mean, yeah, it's fine. Kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
But timid.
That's,
as well.
That's the thing about Outfest that's been really interesting to watch is like, you know, yeah, in the 90s we had this whole sort of cycle of gay indies and they were all like these kind of coming out comedies and that sort of thing. And we kind of got through it and got over it. And not that like, oh, yeah, everything's magically perfect about being queer in the U.S., but that kind of movie, that story felt like it had been done. And then we started seeing them from other parts of the world.
Right, yes.
And so you get these countries in like Asia or the Caribbean that have not... that are not as progressive on you know,
politically,
issues in a day-to-day way, and certainly not in their cinema, them finally getting around to, like, having somebody being
the coming out movies
to tell that story.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see it from that perspective, because there's always there's a specific kind of cultural context for how that happens, you know. And obviously, you know, Mexico, there's, you know, Catholicism and machismo and these things that are very specific to their experience that isn't necessarily a thing that happens in the U.S. And I imagine those things, do those things play a role in the film?
Oh, yeah, because the guy who comes out is on the same soccer team as the two other good friends, and they play, like, first-person shooter video games together, and, you know, they do boy things together. And so when he says he's gay, the homophobe looks at him and says, no, you're not gay. And then he points to the barber, and he's like, he's the gay one. and the guy who's the barber actually says, you know, I made out with a guy once, but it wasn't fun, and I'm not, no. But I'll date your sister. Like, it's... You would never have had 20 years ago a straight character say, you know, I did make out with a guy once.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I didn't feel, I felt nothing.
Dave, the kids today are not into labels.
Right, they are not. And so, so this is more little baby steps forward. And that is it.
Okay.
We're done with talking about films for this week, on this short little episode.
Is that everything?
That's everything.
Oh, no, sorry. We'll talk about that on Sunday, yes.
What?
I was thinking about one of the new films of this week, but we'll talk about it on Sunday.
Right, we're talking about last week.
Yeah, so this is a fill-in. We'll be doing letters when we do our main Sunday show again, but this was just, we wanted to kind of get caught up with things. Again, a reminder real quick, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/linoleumknife, as low as $4 a month. We offer, extra content, more shows like this, LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, and, the saucy and controversial Linoleum Nights.
Very saucy, very controversial.
Yes, so very. And other prizes and things. And
I'm currently on Maximum Fun's Pop Rocket talking about Princess Diana.
Yes.
You are currently on Maximum Fun's Pop Rocket talking about the jams of the summer.
Yes. So check those episodes out. Also, if you go to the Groundlings website, they have a podcast, and I moderated a panel there of LGBTQ comedians, and so luckily they do most of the talking, and they're very funny, so you might want to go check that out.
You barely spoke at all. You just got some questions in.
Yeah, well, that was my role. You know? I mean, I'm on stage with like eight actual
working
comedian people.
Comic
like
actors.
Drew Droege and Michael Hitchcock and Tim Bagley. I'm like, I'm not going to, no one's here to hear me talk.
That is true.
And then Who Shot Ya debuts this week, so please go subscribe to that. I'm very excited about doing this extra show. I will, of course, be doing all of my duties in the Linoleum Knife universe, not to worry, but this is just a new thing on my plate, which I'm very psyched about.
Duties.
Go check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com.
I see what you're doing, you know.
Oh, phasing you out?
I see what you're doing. I'm John Norman Howard Speedway.
I'm Esther Hoffman
and
Howard.
You're Esther Hoffman Howard.
Can you see me?
Doing that chicken dance on the stage. I know what you're doing.
Gentlemen.
You're not.
No, that's not happening.
You're not getting away.
That is not happening.
So fast.
No. Go listen to Cancel Too Soon with our friends Bibbs and Whitney and the Schmoes Know and Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley and the Comics Canon and the Sewers of Paris and... the Criterion cast and Fat Guys of the Movies and Film Spotting SVU
and
Secretly Timid.
Do that bleh. Thank you.
I think we mentioned our friend Michael Verratti has a new gay horror podcast called Dead for Filth, I believe it's called.
I forget.
And then, of course, you also check out All Things Cozy, which is a lot of fun. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at LinoleumCast. Subscribe to the show for free at iTunes. Leave us a nice, positive 5-star review. We do love that, and it does help the show. You can also leave positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and TheLounge.com and CastBox and Podbean and Google Play. And hungry hippos. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We didn't do letters this episode, but we are going to get to them soon. We'll be back Sunday.
Well, soon, the next episode.
Yes, next time. We'll be back on Sunday with letters.
If this is the first episode you've ever listened to of this show, we usually go forever and digress a lot more. We just wanted to.
This was. Oddly,
catch you up a
oddly
bit.
Focused.
Yeah.
We'll be back this weekend talking about It and Home Again and other stuff like that. So until next time.
Goodbye.